Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guys.
Like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray. Hey, Eric Hampton.
RNG fam is like, woo.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
Don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like it. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Anybody can be peace.
Don't get no more realer.
Welcome to Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. RSG Renegade Radio. I'm your host and one-third of the illustrious three-man booth. Marcus, the game changer in the house with my man, D. Wills. Holla at the people.
What's up? What's up? What's up, man? It's good to be back in the seat with you, man. I know we're missing our boy, but he'll be here with us soon. But it's just good to be back, you know, in the booth, in the trenches. Doing. I know we've both been running around trying to make things happen, so it's good to be here, you know, and have a good night here today and share this knowledge and kick this stuff with our listeners.
Absolutely, man. It's been a minute since we've been able to get on. You know, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSD Renegade Radio, brought to you by the folks at Carbon World Health, your complete solution for fitness, health, and beauty. Go to carbonworldhealth.com to connect with Dr. Nestor Rodriguez and his staff to learn more about lifestyle medicine. And when you do, tell them the Real Sports Guy sent you. All right? And then make sure you follow us and like us at realsportsguys.com. We've been grinding at this for a long time, man. We've been slowing down the pace a little bit because, you know, we got other grinds that we're working on and trying to perfect and trying to, you know, build up. And, you know, it's good to get back in touch with this one, man. And, you know, I told you over text, I got a fully loaded clip tonight, man. I'm ready to go. We've been off for so long, and so many things have happened. We're going to talk pretty much all NBA for the next hour. It's going to be a slamming show. Again, you could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with us, and we appreciate your patronage. Let's just go ahead and kick this off, D. Wills. We're going to talk about NBA this summer, the offseason. You know, the Warriors won the finals, defeated the Cavs. And kind of going away fashion 4-1. And it kind of has set the league on an entirely new course. And I'm trying to think about, like, just a moment in either a TV show or an artistic genre where something has happened and it has changed the whole entire way people just go about doing their business. because this Warrior team, I think, has the league, I don't want to say scrambling, just recalibrating where they're at and what they need to do to compete. And, you know, that's the beauty of a competitive field and competitive sports is that, you know, somebody does something that totally breaks the mold and it forces everybody. It forces everybody to rethink what they're doing. It takes me back to a story I heard at a coaching clinic about the first man that broke the 4-minute mile. You know, there was a bunch of science behind the fact that they didn't think a human being could even do it. You know, mm-hmm. and then the first guy does it, and I think within like 3 months, somebody else does it. And then the 4-minute mile gets broken like within the next year, like 10 times. So it just took one person to do it, and it flipped how everybody else thought about themselves and just running a mile, you know what I mean? And I feel like the Warriors have flipped the switch with the NBA world where everybody's just thinking about themselves and the game and how you go about building a team differently, or at least in response to what the Warriors have created. You know, there was a talk about the Warriors, and we haven't had a chance to talk about this, and I want to get your opinion, about the Warriors potentially being the greatest team of all time. I don't want to spend too much time on it. What are your thoughts on that conversation?
I mean, I think that they're in a conversation, but I feel like for me, that you know, when you talk about greatest teams, I think you got to start putting in context in terms of what they do. I think they had a great season, but there are a lot of great teams that we've seen over the years, and so. I don't know where I put them in there. I mean, but they're definitely, you can make an argument, you know, we started to put together your top 10. You would be hard-pressed to leave them out of it. Where they are, it's one of those things that we start having that who's in the little room kind of conversation. You start to nuance it. I think you start to bring back what some of these other teams were able to do and start to enlighten folks. Then you go, well, okay, you know, but you know they're in the conversation. So I feel like they're in the conversation. I think there's some things that sway people in terms of how you evaluate their greatness. And, you know, a lot of the KD argument about how he came versus some of the other stuff start to get into it. But I think that also, you know, some of these other great teams we're talking about were created through some of the similar circumstances. So I don't want to get too deep into that. But, you know, I think they're, you know, if you were to have a team picture, they could be in the team picture. But I also think there's some, you know, even the other great teams you talk about, they have a great year, but you also talk about it in terms of a run. It has a dynasty feel with it, with a great year. You know, like, so if you're talking about the Bulls, you know, being in that context, it's not just, you know, you might not talk like the year where they won, you know, whatever, 72 games or whatever that was, you know, but you also talk about it in the context of winning three championships, right, in a way in which they did it. So, I think, you know, if they make this run again next year, I think it'll be a different kind of conversation. That's the way I see it. But they're definitely in the conversation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm not a fan of the greatest team of all time conversation, much less I'm not a fan of the greatest player of all time conversation very much either. But I'm even much less of a fan of the greatest team of all time conversation.
Yeah.
Because I think when you start talking about teams, eras are so different, and it really impacts, like, how a team is structured, what style of play is being used. You know, I'm a firm believer that today's players are more skilled than yesteryear's players. It doesn't necessarily diminish yesteryear's players' greatness. They were still great players, but I think today's players are more skilled. You have seven-footers who could do stuff that seven-footers 20 years ago just wouldn't even think about doing. And the game is supposed to evolve like that. Like, it's supposed to be a sport where the skill level is higher. And if the skill level in basketball wasn't higher, than it was 20 years ago, then everybody involved in the game is doing something wrong. You know, there aren't very many sports where it isn't being played at a higher level currently today than it was 20 years ago. And that's just evolution. With that said, I think, like, things were just so, like, the 90s Bulls, they were constructed differently to do different things. But they also constructed similarly. Like, they were a small ball team, when you really think about it. Like, they didn't rely on the big and the down low. And they really shifted. Mm-hmm. And this is one thing that I think, you know, Michael Jordan gets a lot of credit for a lot of things. But he doesn't get credit for, in my opinion, shifting the game away from the dominant big to the dominant wing. And for the last 20 years of NBA basketball, it has been about the dominant wing. Whether you go from Jordan, Iverson, Vince Carter, Kobe, on and on and on, it's been about the dominant perimeter scorer. And there have been big sprinkled in, like Shaq and Duncan have been existing in that. But before, there were like five or six bigs that you had to talk about. You know what I mean? And the game has shifted. And Jordan was the dude that kind of brought that in. Where the game, and Matt, you saw it with Magic and Bird, where it started to evolve, and you had these wing big guy, big perimeter guys who were making plays for their team. And then Jordan kind of really seized it and really shifted that momentum, pushing the game towards the perimeter. And now you see someone like Steph Curry come along and even push it further out. And so it's been interesting that's a little tidbit, I think, that doesn't get brought up a lot when people have these very basic and rudimentary conversations about Jordan, where they just count rings, and I'm not here for that. I'm not here for the ring counting.
Yeah.
But if we want to talk about impact and the game on a wider level, we can do that. But I'm not here for the ring counting.
Yeah. And the other thing is, even though it's pushed us to the perimeter, I think even KD showed this year, which was part about Jordan, it didn't substitute a post game. What they did was extended the post game more to the skinny post. It made it a different kind of post game. So it wasn't like the post game just went away. So if you look at some of the key plays that KD made, similar to how Jordan did it, you know, he had his money post game in there. And it was extended.
Right.
And
but he was a wing. And that's
space.
The thing that I'm –
he was a wing creating that.
He was a wing.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, we can win with a great – we can win with a wing. We don't have to have the dominant seven-footer. You know what I mean? And I think that shifted how people thought about the game. Because before and that's why Jordan went third in his draft.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He went third in his own draft because people who were creating teams thought you needed a seven-footer. Because up until that point, Kareem, Wilt, Bill Walton, people like that had been dominating the game. Moses Malone. And they felt like you needed a dominant wing. I mean, a dominant post to be able to win, which is why Jordan went third. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so he had a post game. He had post skills, but he was a wing player. And I think what he did was he broke that mold and showed that, like, a wing player can take you and get you rings. And I don't think that was a common thing. Like I said,
I would even say a step before that, Zeke and them did it, particularly with the addition of Lambert, spacing the floor that, you know, Jordan kind of catapulted. But I would say it made that the big had to be able to shoot, right? It changed the notion that if you had a big, you had to have somebody like a Lambert or somebody like or Sam Perkins, right? Who would bring people out of the lane, right? That was the next evolution. Who could knock down long threes, you know? And so that opened it up for that wing to play. So they gradually kind of changed the role of the big, you know, in that space. And I think, you know, what's interesting about what you just said about about Golden State is at the end of the day, the teams that win have a clear identity, right? Even though they're when you talk about the Bulls, there was something distinctive that you could say they were, right? You know, they were going to extend their defense, they were going to trap you, they were going to do this, and then offensively they were going to do, but they had an identity. And they drafted and developed along that identity, which is what you can say is true for Golden State. You know, there's a lot of teams that try to play that spread and whatever, but Golden State drove a culture. Because the part about Golden State that people didn't realize, and I think we even talked about this before they won their first championship, and you and I talked a little about it, when you start looking at where they were ranked in terms of defense, offense, and then when, you know, they do that kind of combined ranking, what surprised me early on before the first championship, I'm looking at them like, because they were getting branded as an offensive team. I'm like, dang, man, their defensive efficiency and the way they play defense is actually pretty hot. You know, so it wasn't like, you know, they had them branded as this great offensive team, but you like, these guys are actually committing to the defensive side of the ball. And so that balance, like, Like, that's what's true about it. I think where teams might be missing it with chasing Golden State is they're only focused on what they do offensively and not focused on the fact that they are focused on stopping people, right? They play as good defense as anyone. And so their stars are even evolved to try and stop them defensively. And I think that's the part that a lot of these teams miss, that they got players, they got more players, and you and I have talked about this, they got more players who can play both ends well, right? And so they don't have, you know, who commit to it in ways that you don't see a lot of other teams do. You know, one of the things we talk about Cleveland is that they got too many one-way players. Guy can either be defense, can't do offense. Do offense, can't do defense. But Golden State got more guys. Their guys can play at least at a respectable level. If nothing else, and a couple guys are playing elite on both ends. And so it's interesting, I'm seeing how these teams are building as we get a free agency, that sometimes with some of these teams, I think they're missing that part of what they're developing. And but you can see the teams who understand it, right? And they're going, but there's an identity about it. And some of these teams I know we're going to talk about, they're making moves, but you're going to say, like, what are they trying to do? Like, win, lose, or draw, the teams who do well, whether you've never beat a Golden State, but you always are making it to the Eastern Conference or Western Conference Finals, most of those teams have some type of identity. And when I'm looking at some of these moves that we'll get to, I'm like, okay, what are y'all trying to do? Who are y'all?
Yeah, and so let's start with the moves. Let's start with the shifting and the moving of the pieces, and let's go back in time, and let's start with the NBA draft. The draft was opened up with a big trade between the Boston Celtics, who traded out of the first spot and moved into the third spot, and then you had the Jimmy Butler trade with the Chicago Bulls. Traded Jimmy Butler, one of the top 10 players in the league, to the Minnesota Timberwolves, a young and upcoming team. For some young pieces and a draft pick, because they gave up a draft pick, which the Chicago Bulls fans that we kick it with were, you know, upset about.
They were crazy.
Before we get and let's talk about the Jimmy Butler trade real quick.
Yeah.
The thing I want to just give everybody a heads up on who is following the NBA, the days of having a superstar and then trading them for like this huge haul are over. Name me the last dude, big name star, who got traded and the team got like a whole bunch of good stuff. You go back to Dwight Howard. Nope.
Yeah.
Who else? DeMarcus Cousins. Nope. You know, like, I mean, you may say Denver and Carmelo. When Denver traded Carmelo, and they got some stuff back.
Man, I'm up here trying to figure out what's going on with Russell Westbrook, man. Russell is wearing some stuff he shouldn't wear. He accepted the war. He was wearing some bottoms. I wasn't sure if he was trying to go to open gym or what, with a black top. Like, some of these styles, like, everything ain't made to be well-worn. Like I wasn't sure if he should have some slippers on. I'm telling you, dog, it was some old-school green, like, sweat bottles, like the It looked like a 1982 Boston Celtic warm up with a black shirt, dress shirt. Like, I wasn't sure what this cat is doing. What is going on, man? I'm just saying, man. I'm just saying.
That's how I be. These guys nowadays, man, they just wild. I just chalk it up, and it's not for me. It's not my thing. Like, I like a little style, a little classiness. But they just kind of get out there all exotic with it. And it's just like, yo, are you going to a basketball game or a rave? Like, I can't even, like, what are you dressed for right now? You know what I mean? Are you dressed for a bum fight? What are you dressed for?
I mean, when you see this outfit, man, I'm like, you know how sometimes you cut to somebody's living room to accept an award? I'm like, they must be cut to this cat's living room because you ain't going to wear this out. In this one, you got Michelle Obama at this event, and you coming out here looking like you should have some slippers on. Come on, y'all. Like, you know, KD and Steph will look kind of salty, though.
Hey.
I didn't hear the volume, but that's how I go, baby. You know, it's just kind of how it be right now.
That is how
but
it
you
be.
But you were talking about you were talking about the value you get back from a trade, and I was saying in your absence, I don't know if it was caught, was that you can only hope in today's thing to get a couple of young pieces that you think might work for a draft pick. Like, if you get lucky to get that out of it, and I think what Chicago got was they just wanted a flyer on two young guys that they hope pan out. To me, that's about as good as you can get with a thing like Jimmy Butler. I just hope these young cats actually turn into something. They got potential to do that, but you're not going to get any big-time value other than you see a young cat that they may have given up on that you think can turn it around in your environment. That's about as best you can get. If you get lucky, maybe a pick that you hope might turn into something. But you're not going to get, like you said, the wholesale. You know, there's no more Herschel Walker-type deals out there. This ain't happening.
Right.
You ain't got Red Auerbach right. pulling a, you know, a deal where he going to get Robert Parrish. And other than if you do a trade with Brooklyn, then you might get something.
Brooklyn is kind of figuring it out now, man. They're kind of figuring it out. They've made some competent moves, and they might be not complete trash next year. But we were talking about the draft. And so far, so good, man. This draft has been really intriguing. The guys who have been picked, there weren't a whole lot of surprises on draft night. And the guys who have been picked and have played in summer league thus far have all looked very, very good. I mean, you know, the Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, Jason Tatum, Josh Jackson, De'Aaron Fox. That top five is like one of the most solid top fives I think we've had in a long time. Where you like,
yeah,
I can see all of these guys becoming a, if not a surefire all-star, a borderline all-star. Fultz was giving guys the business before he messed up his ankle. Lonzo, I think he's just a different kind of player. You can see his impact on that team already. How he moves the ball. I think he's going to be a very good player, a very good player. I am not in the Lonzo Ball is going to suck camp. I think he's a different kind of player. But I think when you talk about building an identity, his style of play gives your team an identity.
Mm-hmm. They get more good shots, even in the summer league, than I saw them get all last year. Like, he gets people into good shots. In the NBA, that's half the battle. Getting good looks. And they just, even with, you know, they don't have that much time to practice, he gets them into good shots. And that's the part that I love about, this process is that, you know, these guys are getting into good shots, man. They're getting the kinds of things that you hope that you get with a young player like that at your point guard. Like, they got a lot of different good talent they're putting together. I think the Brook Lopez pickup is solid. They're talking about overall winners. I mean, the stuff that Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka have done in a short period of time compared to what you saw happen in New York, I mean, they've done more in probably a month and a half than New York New York has probably done in like the past 6 years when you think about, you know, these anchor franchises on the coast and the way they move some to create that anchor in there and creating that stuff. They got Caldwell Pope in, so they add really good solid veterans into the place mixed with some of these young guys. You know, some of these young guys who are now developing as sophomores and get stuff together. I love the Thomas Robinson pickup. You know, Thomas Robinson, I watched him at the Hoop Hysteria in Indiana. He won a three-point contest. This is a big. He can shoot. He can spread. But he got a big-time motor. He rebounds. He put it together. He's getting into the game. You know, I love, you know, all the stuff that he has going on. With it. So the Lakers have really, you know, with Ball put together some things. And if Ball is only going to become a better player, like when I watch him play, Rob Pelinka talked a little bit about, you know, when he watched his workout, he's not the kind of kid you can really evaluate playing by himself. That's like, you know, that's like having a great musician just play by himself. But when he puts all the instruments together, you really see the creativity and the fullness of a player like that. And so Alonzo's only going to be better as they put the rest of the team around him. He's going to get them into good shots. But they got a lot of good pieces, part of that mix that good. So I'm like, not even just the top five players. I know Marcus was mentioning it earlier. But like I'm seeing depth in some of these other players, and that, you know, the maturity level. You hear these guys interview. They just had a, you know, the way these guys are also ready for prime time. You know, De'Aaron Fox, when you interview, it's like he's like a 5-6 year vet. You know, you change the way and it's not just it's not just real stuff. Like, it's not like somebody was in their ear like an agent. It's just, they just know how to do it, which is, it's just wild when you hear them. Like, they got this old wisdom kind of aspect to them that you was like, hey, these guys are wise beyond their years. You know, I'm feeling them, man. So you're right, man. This group of, I've been watching Summer League. And I know we've been in our text message group talking a little bit about this, man, and, you know, with some of these cats. Yeah, that we have in our group, and we, you know, we're like, you know, sometimes you can look at somebody and you can just tell they can do it. Like, you don't need a lot of film. Like, you can tell they can just play. Like, it's underrated. I always hear some of the NBA guys. I hear some of these schools going, it's summer league, it's this and that. And I'm like, anybody who's been around basketball, you don't care if the kid playing at the park. You can tell when somebody can play. Even you just can tell if you spend enough time around players. And so these kids that we're talking about can play. And
the whole summer league thing is just weird to me. Yeah, the whole summer league thing is just—it just sounds like a thing to say, because it's like, well, do we just say, well, this is just college? Like, they're not playing against pros in college either. They're playing against more professional level players in summer league than they ever will in college on a night to night basis. Like, every night, these guys are the best dudes in college. And we give more credence to what a guy does in college over what happens in summer league. I don't get that, but that's kind of what people do. It's a weird thing, but you're absolutely right, D. Wills. Like, you ain't gotta watch nobody play against pros to know if they're a pro. Like, there's certain things that you can just see. I think the things that you can see in summer league, you can see if a guy has, like, point guards. Like, there's certain things that'll happen in summer league with point guards where, you know, if a point guard scoring 25 points a game in summer league, and that's probably not what we're going to be asking you to do. That's great that you can do that, but that's probably not the role that you're going to be playing. Like, our guys doing the things that translate, that are going to translate to the role that they will potentially have, that's how you're going to tell they can contribute. There's a big man rebound. Like, if he's getting rebounds in summer league, okay, then he's showing that he can do a thing at this level. And then not playing defense. If you ain't playing, if you can't guard in summer league, then you ain't going to play defense in the season. So there's certain things that you can look for in summer league, and there can be some telltales. And then it's just like, some people have it, and you got to know it when you see it. I don't care if you're watching them, like you said, I don't care if you watch them on the playground or on Saturday morning. You just got to know it when you see it. Like, if some people just pop out at you, and if you know the game, you will see that. You will see certain things where it's like, that guy's going to turn out to be a player. And you might see some guys who aren't heralded where you're like, that's a guy that I like my team to go after. That's a guy that I think could be a good role player on a good team. There are still things that you can see if you know what you're looking for. Yeah, if you ain't got no clue what you're looking for, it's just summer league. You know what I mean? But the summer league, there's been some great stuff in summer league. And again, you can see the pieces and glimpses of what's to come from some of these young guys.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head on some of the stuff that, I've been very impressed with what I've been seeing in summer league. And there's some highlights. And, you know, when we're talking about who's winning kind of free agency, you know, part of it starts with the draft. You know, what do they do with the draft, and then what do they build on those, and how do all those pieces play together? And also in summer league, you know, what do those second year guys look like? So you take somebody like a Bryce Johnson and some of those guys who now have their second year, and their team made some moves, and you know they're going to be getting more minutes. You know, are they ready for these more minutes, and what kind of impact can these guys make when they get the minutes? You know, that's the kind of stuff that gets me excited about it. You know, or Chris in terms of what I've seen with him for Phoenix and the aggressiveness and the attitudes, like just the footwork, you know, knowing where he got to get his shots, where probably last summer league he was rushing everything, but the patience, you know, what that's going to mean for adding depth into their lineup, you know, and he's getting some run with somebody like Jackson, who's going to be on the floor with, because Jackson's going to play. So so, you know, it's that part that you start to see what those second-year guys are doing, or Buddy Hill, you know, now that he knows that he's going to be here. So, you know, how is he growing? Because you know he's going to be someone they're going to be looking to score. So, you know, how is that second summer looking for that growth? And mm-hmm. are they dominating the second summer like they're supposed to? That's the part I also look for. Because we have so much focus on these rookies, you know, I'm really starting to put my eye on, like, who are these second-year guys? How have they grown from last year to this year? What are they working on? Because that tells you a little bit, too. Like, do they got something new that they've worked on and developed this summer that we didn't see last summer, which tells you that they're beginning to, as you always say, self-scout, right? And they're beginning to develop that, and they're following the instructions of the team, and you can see it playing out in the summer league experience. So I think there's a lot you can get from it. If it didn't work, coaches wouldn't want to do it. NBA wouldn't do it if it wasn't working, especially with the way in which some of these teams like San Antonio have now developed almost like baseball strategies, where they are developing these players. You know, the ones who really get it, they are like treating it like it's baseball. And you've seen guys who you saw 2 years ago, now them kids are playing at a whole nother level because they've really groomed them to get ready to join the roster. So I think even NBA teams are changing. They're moving more to like baseball with this because they're getting some of these kids so young that they know they can develop and grow in that way.
Yeah, and this whole concept of the two-way contracts and things like that are allowing for that mentality to kind of take hold and take root and develop a little bit more and get deeper ingrained into the development process in the NBA. But you're right on, man. You know, and that internal growth, right, that growth from within is so underrated, but that's how the Warriors became the Warriors. You know, before KD got there, Steph grew and became Steph. Klay developed and became Klay Thompson. These guys weren't one number one picks that were supposed to be surefire, legit all-stars. Draymond grew. And you got to have an environment that grows players. I don't care what you're doing free agency or who you think you're going to attract or who you think you're going to sign. You have to have an environment where you grow talent. And if you can't have that environment, you're going to be spinning your wheels and trying to roll a dice and find people and entice people to come to you rather than growing your own. And that's what I appreciate a little bit about Philadelphia's process. And I know it's kind of a running joke about the process, but, you know, it's a big deal. And it's working. I don't care what you say, it's working. They have three guys now on their roster who, by all accounts, should be very, very good players in the NBA within the next 3 to 4 years. Embiid is definitely, definitely an impact player. He just has to stay healthy. But honestly, I think if they get 60 to 70 games of Embiid last year, they might have made the playoffs in the East. You know what I mean? They won 28 games with him only playing 30-some. You know, and when he was playing, they were pretty much a 500 team. So I see him as really a game-changing player. And that's a conversation that I think we want to get into as we start talking about free agency, is this perception that the West is so loaded and that the East is just going to be bad and we just need to, like, scrap that whole conference model. It's cute to talk about, but when you really think about it, and I'm looking through free agency right now, what big-name player from the East – went and signed to the West. Signed. Like, on their own accord, left the Eastern Conference. There's one.
Millsap.
Paul Millsap.
You consider
Millsap.
Him.
He's the only one. So, like, this whole, like, oh, my God, all the best players are in the West. Two guys were traded. You know what I mean? Because their teams were mediocre in the East. You know what I mean? Like, so two guys were traded. Like, it's not – there isn't this mass exodus of guys who are choosing to go west from the East. And when you start really looking at the landscape, like, this whole LeBron to L.A. talk makes so little sense at this point. Simply because, why would LeBron go to the Western Conference? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that part.
He's been to seven straight finals. And I think part of the reason – and this is something that I think when people start to take historical inventory of things, people say, well, the East has been bad for 20 years. We just need to move on from the conference model. the East has had arguably the two best players in the history of the game for the last 20 years. When you talk about going from Jordan, then, you know, there was a lull, and then LeBron, right? And so it's like a lot of cats are running because they don't want to compete against – they didn't want – Charles Barkley left the East. You know what I mean? Shaq left the East. Them cats went west because they didn't want nothing to do with Mike. And you can say the same for a lot of guys going west with LeBron.
And when you add in D-Wade in that little mix there, you know, this
right.
The East wasn't an easy place to, you know, that's why people were voting.
Exactly. So it's just like, you know, when the best player is in the league is in on one side, yeah, you going to the other side. Why? Because you ain't got to go through that guy. And so that's just an interesting thing, I think, to think about when people talk about, like, the East. And, again, I think in 3 years we're going to be having a very different conversation as Giannis Antetokounmpo continues to grow. The guys in Philly start to grow up and become great players. John Wall is a great player. Like, people keep talking about the top 14 players at the beginning of the season from this ESPN poll. That poll was taken at the beginning of the season. Giannis ain't on that poll. Are you kidding me? Dude's a top seven, top six player in the league. If he ain't on your poll whack. Period. You know what I mean? Like, he's not on that poll. John Wall had the best season of his career. He ain't on that poll. It's like, you know, I think sometimes we just talk to the media. And when I say we, the media, we just talk because we need to talk. And we need to fill airspace. And that's what they've been doing with this whole Eastern Conference talk. It's not a real thing. It's not a real thing at all. The East will be fine. It'll be bad this year. DeMar DeRozan ain't even on that list. And because people didn't see him as that kind of a player at the beginning of the last season.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just think things can be a bit overblown. There are really good players who are still in the East. There isn't the depth that they have in the West. But that'll change. Because, again, cats going to start leaving the West. Gordon Hayward is in the East for a reason. Because he looked at that Utah team and he said, yeah, I love these guys and we could be good. But we ain't good enough to be Golden State. You know what I mean? Like, and LeBron's going to do the same thing. He's going to look at the landscape out there in a year. What's going to change that much in a year where LeBron is going to think he has a team in the West with him on it that's going to beat the Warriors?
Like,
I'm waiting. Yeah, because, I mean, he's playing with Kyrie and Kevin Love right now. They not chopped liver. And they couldn't beat the Warriors but once. So it's like, how is he going to get a better supporting cast than that? You know what I mean? When you talk about, like, your second and third chair. So I think that's a bit overblown. Tell me this. What were some of the moves that you liked the most about this offseason? Or that you were excited about the most this offseason that were made during free agency? Signings, trades, what really piqued your interest and has you intrigued about certain teams going into next season?
Well, I can, you know, I knew we were going to talk a little bit about this, and so I kind of put this winner. I think there was a number of good moves based on how they're going to play out. But let me just start with the Lakers, man. You know, I'm a Piston guy, so I can't believe I'm talking about this. But you got to think about what Rob Pelinka and Magic have done in short order. You know, this is what should frustrate the Knicks fan. That Magic is coming in short order. They get, Brook Lopez and Caldwell Pope, right? Then they get these solid rookies I think are going to be good. You got Josh Hart, Thomas Robinson. I watched him in the Hoop Hysteria last year. This guy won the three-point contest. He got a motor. He sneaked. This Kyle Kuzma from Utah, loved him. I love them in terms of they got that straight junkyard dog attitude, but they're skilled players who can grow. And I think they're going to be doing – so I like what the Lakers have done to start to develop who their identity is. And we've already talked about Ball being who he is. But I think the Josh Hart one is another sneaky, great pick who's just going to be a solid pro. He knows how to play. I like that. The Timberwolves, I like what the Timberwolves have done when you think about adding Butler, Taj Gibson, Jamal Crawford. The one thing I worry about is – and this is where Thibodeau – is got his issues in some ways. They got to do that, but at the same time allow Wiggins and Towns to still be part of the leadership group. He can't create the Bulls of the West. But if he can do this move he got, but still allow Wiggins and Towns to grow, that means Butler has got to fall into that leadership with them youngins coming up. then I think they're going to make a really great jump. And then I think I like there's two teams who are in the finals for two different reasons. Even though Cleveland had all the craziness they had, the offseason still puts them where they need to be. But if you think about Golden State, it's like the rich get richer. They get Swaggy T, they get Omar Cassidy, and they get Jordan Bell in the draft. And then they got McGraw going one extra year, and they retain their stars in back. I mean, I think Golden State had some real interesting wins that I think are important because they got better in a number of key spots while retaining key vets. So that's just a couple of things. I think there's some other teams that did really well, but those are some things that kind of stuck out to me.
Yeah, I want to pick your brain on this. I agree. Golden State, I think, did a great job. I think Tibbs does have to be careful about just how do you mix in those young guys with the old guys and the old guys kind of, you know, allowing the young guys to grow. The thing that I think I've seen this summer that I've realized is at a premium is wing players. And that's what I like. I like what Boston has done. I like what Boston has done a lot. Boston has figured out a way to win now but still maintain future flexibility. That's the sign of a friggin' plan, man. That is the sign of a friggin' plan. That's the thing that Cleveland was missing when LeBron decided to go there, that they had no sort of roadmap as to how do we win now while still preserving and putting ourselves in position to be able to win in the future and to make this a long-term run. Like, the Celtics are a dynastic franchise, and they are not looking to be hot right now. They're looking to be hot forever. And, you know, people talk about the picks that they got and they need to flip those picks. Not necessarily. If there's not a move to be made, then there's not a move to be made. It is chess, not checkers. That's what got the Knicks in trouble right now. You know, the Knicks just threw a whole boatload of money. You know, threw a Louis bag of money at Tim Hardaway Jr. just to do something. And you can't just be out there doing stuff just to do something, man. It's got to have a purpose.
They
got to have
a sense. Who I thought they could have traded him in the first place. They drafted a trade, and now they got paid more coming back. It's just, it was, when they traded him, I'm like, why are you trading him? He was really, looked like he was, the stuff he did in Atlanta, he was on his way to doing in New York. They traded him, now they got paid more money coming back. It was, no plan. And I would say is the loss of GMs. Two GMs got lost, right? One got fired. Well, two got fired, Cleveland and New York. Have really changed the balance of what this offseason could be. Because I think Cleveland would have made different moves had they kept their GM. And so they're sitting on the sidelines.
Right.
So a lot of these moves are made with Cleveland sitting on the sidelines in a way I don't think they would have been sitting on the sidelines. And then you haven't been able to feel what's happening in New York. So that's opened up a lot of openings for some of these teams that we're talking about, where some of these players are going to places that they probably would have ended up in New York or Cleveland if they had their leadership in place the right way. So that's another part that's opened this game up a little bit more than it would have been.
Right. And again, if you have a plan beyond LeBron, which is that's just my honestly at this point, and it's not because of LeBron James. It is because of the people in the organization at Cleveland, just how poorly run I feel like they are. I am so not ever going to be rooting for Cleveland to win a championship because they just don't deserve to. Like, they just don't deserve to. They are just poorly run. They are just poorly run. And what's his face? What's the guy? Gilbert just does not need to be rewarded for his lack of foresight, his lack of ability to really put the people in place. He's a penny pincher. But he's not a penny pincher, but he's a penny pincher. You know what I mean? Like, he's got the highest payroll in the league, but then he won't pay a GM. And it's like, again, your whole game plan is just, I got LeBron, and I'm not here for that. I'm not here for that at all. But again, that's what I enjoy about what Boston is doing. You know, Tatum looks legit. They add Gordon Hayward. They add, Jaylen Brown is growing and getting better.
Yeah.
They move Avery Bradley, which, you know, I like Avery Bradley a lot. I like his game. I like his skill set. But the move made sense. You know, they need to get a little bit bigger. They don't have any fours, losing Amir Johnson. So they had to get the Morris kid, who is a pretty decent defender. It makes them a little bit more flexible defensively, where they can switch stuff. And that's, again, they're looking at, we got to be Golden State. We got to be Cleveland. And we need to be able to switch and move and do different things and have some interchangeable parts in order to do that. They see that writing on the wall, and they're adjusting.
So the question I want to ask you is that going to force Isaiah to play different?
What's that?
Is that going to force – because the part that I'm trying to figure out how they're going to play, that means you got to play differently than you did last year. I mean, Isaiah can't take as many shots. He's got to be a different kind of scorer for that team than he was this past year with the added pieces you brought in, meaning that he's not – necessarily going to take as many shots, because right now, you know, he had the best kind of shooting percentage or numbers in the fourth quarter,
right?
But because he had to be. But now when you add someone like Gordon Hayward, you had a young cat like Tatum, who I call him as the next coming Mikal, because they might have him coming off the bench, you know, sixth man of the year early on, and then he's going to get inserted to the starting lineup, you know. But you got offense, and so that means he's going to be a little bit more efficient. You know, his shots might drop if they're going to be the kind of team they need to be, and can he do that?
And that's going to be the thing that, fortunately enough, Danny Ainge has left himself the flexibility to be able to make that decision and then move off of him and not be stuck. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's the beauty about how they've set that up in Boston.
That's right.
I think, yes, you're right. I think they're going to have to play differently. I think they got the right guy to figure out how they need to play in Brad Stevens. If IT don't fit, IT going to be out. You know what I mean? Like, they'll move them. And they'll move them, they'll get something for them, and they'll keep going. I mean, Brooklyn will still be bad, and that Brooklyn pick is going to be worth something. I mean, next year's draft is supposed to be pretty good at the top again. I mean, that's the thing. So they can do what the Sixers did, but be winning while doing it. They don't have to tank. You know what I mean? They got Jaylen Brown at 3 last year. They got Tatum at 3. They had the number 1 pick. Next year they're looking at probably a top 5 pick again, top 2 or top 3 pick again next year. That's 3 drafts in a row where you're picking in the top 3 to top 5. And you're winning 50 plus games while doing it. They're doing exactly what Philly did. Right. They're doing exactly what Philly did, but they're not having a tank to do it. They're putting themselves in a great position to win a lot of games going forward. Houston, what do you think about what Houston did? The Houston Rockets trade for CP3. You got kind of 2 teams right there. You got the Clippers and the Rockets, who are kind of going in – I don't know if they're going in different directions, because I like what the Clippers have done. Let's focus on the Rockets right now. What do you think about what the Rockets have done to try and position themselves as a possible challenger to the Warriors in the West?
You know, you have to help me, because part of what – this is back to what I was saying before with you about they can go against the Warriors offensively. But at the end of the day, can you make those championship stops? You have to make 3 to 5 stops. Can you do that? And how does – CP3's leadership style plays when Harden's been the top dog? Like, he's a general, right? He only knows one way to play, one way to lead. And what is that going to do in terms of how Harden, who's kind of growing into it? So those are dynamics. I think if they can make it work, it's going to be beautiful, right? Harden's already demonstrated, because Harden's been to a finals, right? And he's been deeper in the playoffs without CP3. CP3 has had trouble getting out of the first round. So to what extent does he go after – because part of his growth is, how does he look to someone like Harden, and what can Harden bring to the table, and what does he have to give up? Those dynamics are the only thing that I worry about with that, and how can D'Antoni manage that? It's going to bring Harden off the ball, which is great, but those are the kind of things I worry about with that team in terms of their ability to challenge Golden State. I'm not sure how it fits. And this is why I was hoping to hear you, because I think you have some really good insight. You're a CP3 guy. I'm trying to figure out how that fits.
Yeah, I mean, it's cute, but it ain't beating the Warriors. That's been my That's what my mantra all summer. Every time somebody, what do you think of so and so? What do you think of this and this? I'm like, it's cute, but they ain't beating the Warriors. Like,
that's a pick for the fan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's a pick. That's a GM move for the fan.
When you really look at the move, like, how does that help you beat the Warriors? CP3 ain't finna guard KD. Harden ain't finna guard KD. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then okay,
and you
so
train
you, I mean, like,
the size that you could. You trade somebody like Decker and some other people got size. So you trade like you're getting rid of like you're too. You have a young guy with size. You get away who plays on the wing, right? Who you
right.
have to groom, and then you get rid of your best defensive stopper, right? Well,
right.
So it's like what,
and somehow
what did you
CP3 was first team all defense. Somehow CP3 was first team all defense. Which CP3 is a good player, but come on now, I don't think he should have been first team all defense. But he was. CP3 was first team all defense. So you can say it's a wash. Between him and Beverly, you get more offense. But dang it, you don't need a great point guard. You don't need a great defensive point guard. You don't need a great defensive six-footer. Like, you need 6'8" dudes who can play defense and play offense. And so I just don't see how to move. Like I said, it's cute, but they ain't finna beat the Warriors. It's just, they just
I
not finna beat the Warriors.
That was a front-page move, man. It's going to play
it
well
was.
In Houston.
It was.
People are going to feel good about it, but they ain't going to realize
right.
they're bamboozled until
they're
down 0-3.
They'll win 60 games. They'll win 60 games, and then they're going to get smoked in the second round. You know what I mean? Like, and at this point, I really don't see a team in the West equipped to really challenge the Warriors. If Rudy Gay is somewhat, if he's 80% of himself, maybe San Antonio can give the Warriors a go because I think the Kawhi, Jonathan Simmons, Danny Green, Rudy Gay combination on the wing might be enough, you know what I mean, to challenge Golden State defensively while still holding them accountable offensively. But I just don't see any teams with a really strong core of wing players. Because other than Boston is really the only team I'm like, okay, they're loading up on the wing. They see the writings on the wall. They're getting a bunch of 6'8", 6'7", dudes who could defend and, you know, shoot. Because, I mean, Boston's got Tatum, Jay Crowder, Brown, Hayward. They got a lot of wingy guys. I mean, they got a lot of 6'7", and 6'9", guys who can handle the ball, shoot, play some defense. Play adequate enough defense. And again, it's that Golden State model where Hayward doesn't have to be locked down. He just has to be above average. You know what I mean? They got guys to do the lockdown thing. Same with Tatum. Tatum doesn't have to be a lockdown defender, even though he has the potential to be. He just has to be above average, you know, for a while. I don't see a team that's really figured out, like, what they need to do to load up and get after Golden State. And that's why I feel like Cleveland's going to be hurt. Cleveland, I just don't think they have enough on the wings. And, you know, it goes back to the point I made, you know, 3 years ago, should have kept Wiggins. And yep. anybody who's in, but Kevin Love, keeping Kevin Love was the right thing to do. Nah, man, I ain't with that. Because if that was the right thing to do, why you trading him? Why you finna trade him? You traded him for a number one pick. A number one pick who's turned out to be a pretty good player so far and is still only 21. You need to make that work. Otherwise, it's a sunk cost at this point. And that's a blemish. You know what I mean? That's a black eye. If you gave up a number one pick for a guy that you feel like you can't really ride or die with, I think that was really short-sighted.
And the part that I think is, so this is a part of not having a GM. This is why pay Chauncey $2 million. You know, because you can't let Griff go and then not get a Chauncey for like $2 million. That you're gonna get the money back from the merchandise. Because you got a young guy like sitting out here, let's say someone like Terrence Jones, 25 years old. This guy rebounds, shoot jumpers, but like you put him can defend a little bit, right? You put him like, LeBron doesn't need the same type of pieces everybody else needs, but he needs cats who can play both ends. You get a young cat like that, but you have to have a GM helping you get some of those pieces that they just miss an opportunity. There's people sitting out there who you can bring in, and you need a full season with them and they just missing the boat, man. Like you said, like Gilbert doesn't deserve this. If you don't let Griff, like you can't let somebody like Griff go and not have a plan, and then shortchange somebody like Chauncey. Like there's too much writing on the wall at this point to miss those kind of moves. And there's still some people sitting out there that you can get that can fit into the system, but you got to move now. And so you're right. Just barring that, the only other team I think, because I watched them play against them last year, and they played them tough, is Minnesota. But it's for the thing that's missing. The one thing about Tibbs is he ride them too hard, and now they're gonna have the offensive innovation to do what they need. They'll play well defensively, but are they gonna have the offensive innovation? And the offensive innovation is gonna depend a lot on what some young cats do. You got a person like Towns, he creates some problems. he's a problem child. But if he don't feel like he grow and got the leadership and Wiggins to do something, then you can't really challenge him. Maybe you push him this year with the idea that you come back the following year to really go after him. But you could push him to a deciding game this year. That would be a victory for you. And he got the kind of team to do it if he don't let him grow.
I still don't think they got enough wings, though.
He'll need the youngins to do it.
Yeah, I still don't feel like they got enough wings, though. I mean, you got Wiggins, you got Butler, and two ain't enough. two ain't enough for Golden State.
What helps you is a guy like Towns who can play in space. Like, he can play small. Like, Towns gives you that other guy who, when he switches, he doesn't get lost. So you got some pieces there. Like, even though you had to win, you got a big, like, Towns who can guard multiple spots because he's a big who's athletic. And he don't get caught up. Because when I watched him play against Golden State, you know, there was times he got switched off on Steph. Was right in front of him. So you do got a big that he creates different problems that you don't. Most teams don't have a guy like Big Cat like that.
Right, right.
But you,
right.
But when they, I think when they get hurt is offensively they get stagnant, and that's the part that and Tibbs has got to let them play loose, and that's the part I don't know if he can do. Yeah, I have not seen him coach that way, and we got to see if that changes or not. You're right. Other than that,
right,
they should run right through the West. You know, if San Antonio can't stop them, nobody else gonna stop them.
Right.
You know,
so again,
I like what Portland's
like...
done. Yeah, I like what Portland's done,
yeah,
but they ain't ready yet.
Yeah, yeah, they're not ready. I mean, and that's the thing. So like the teams that are kind of bubbling underneath the radar are not ready to challenge. So. You know, we're going to be looking at Warriors, Cavs, I think, again next year because I still don't see I still don't think the Celtics have enough to beat the Cavs. I don't think offensively I'm going to be interested to see what they look like offensively. And how are they incorporating a Jaylen Brown and a Jason Tatum and some of their younger talent into how are they making that bridge between the guys that are ready to go now, the Haywards and the Thomases and the Horfords, to the guys who are not ready for prime time yet, but are going to be big time players in 2 or 3 years, and how they're melding all of that together in a way that makes a championship team. That's tough to do. I think they can win 50 games doing it, but to really beat a seasoned veteran championship team with that weird mix of young guys and now guys, unless the young guys really take some big steps and some big jumps, I think it's going to be tough and complicated. But Brad Stevens, he can get it done if anybody can.
Yeah, I trust you.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap up this podcast. You've been listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. D-Wills, any final thoughts before we get off of the airwaves with this particular podcast?
Well, I know we're going to continue to talk about it because there's a lot going on. You know, the one thing I'm really interested in seeing, you know, where they go. We didn't get too much into it, but I know it's your team. It's the Milwaukee Bucks. They're speaking D.J. Wilson, who they got from Michigan. This is a kid who's got length, can play, and it's like only finding himself a little bit. When you add him into the mix with the Greek Freak, you know, there's some – it's going to be really – I'd love to have a conversation about a 3 to 4 year window conversation. Like, you know, Golden State and Cavs are now, but who is in that 3 to 4 – like, they're going to be fully baked in 3 years. that Milwaukee Bucks team feels like a like an Eastern version of Utah in the sense that they're finding their polar stars. They're trying to develop their organizational identity. And they got some people that don't mind being in that space, you know, are growing up there. And it's interesting to, like, find what are the three. I think Utah is developing that. You know, what are those three or four teams that will be baked in 3 to 4 years? I'd love to be able to talk a little bit more about that podcast.
Yeah, and I definitely want to get into that a little bit because when we talk about teams that feel like they have, like, the Bucks draft their identity. Like, that's one thing I've appreciated about being a fan of this team is that they've kind of figured out, like, yo, we could be the longest team ever. So we just looking for long 6'10 wings. And I like that, though. I think they figured out that, like, the next evolution of the game, because you talked about it when we were talking about just, like, taking a historical inventory of how the game has evolved. They're breadcrumbs that are being dropped along the way. You talk about Bill Laimbeer and guy and big man who've been able to shoot and seeing that. And then, you know, the Bulls kind of taking that to another level and kind of playing ball without the center being the centerpiece. And these are things that we saw with great teams that they did and took advantage of and have laid the foundation for things that we're seeing now. And so, like, there are going to be things that their breadcrumbs being dropped now for what the game is going to look like 10 years from now. And I think the Bucks are delving into a different kind of a blueprint, which is how do you play small ball without being small, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's where the Bucks are kind of taking the game, is that we're going to play small ball, but we have all these versatile players who can have all these different perimeter skill sets, but they all going to be like 6'10".
Yeah.
Like that, when that team shows up, then the game will have changed again, right? When you have a team where they're playing small ball, but instead of playing small ball at 6'7 and 6'8, they're playing small ball from 6'8 to 6'10, 6'11, 7 feet. That's going to be a whole other situation. And the Bucks have the key player to facilitate that evolution in Giannis, who is a 7-foot point guard. So now it's just finding guys who are tall at their position who can do enough. When you talk about a Chris Middleton who can play the two at 6'8, you know, they drafted DJ Wilson kid who maybe he can play the three, maybe he can play the four. Jabari, when he gets back, is a 6'9 small forward or power forward. Then you put in the Wilson kid. Now you got a 6'10 small forward, a power forward. And then you got Thon Maker, who's 7'1", who can shoot threes and block shots. So now you got a lineup where your smallest guy is 6'8", and they all got perimeter skills. Boy, you heard it here first. Those are the breadcrumbs that are being dropped for the next evolution of basketball. Now, maybe they mess it up, and it doesn't come to fruition, but it's a breadcrumb, right? And you can see, like, okay, I see what they're trying to do. And sometimes the first person to do it doesn't always get it right. It's the next person that comes along, and they learn from the mistakes of the first crew, and they revamp that imprint. But the thing that the Bucks have that don't anybody else have is Giannis. And Giannis allows you to kind of see that vision because you have a 7-foot point guard.
And you appear to have a link between the people on the court, people in the front office, and the ownership. There's continuity in that. What you really need, what you really need in a small market. Like, you can't win without it. Like, you got to have alignment around that. And the thing I also want to have you talk about upcoming, because I think this is part of it, you know, this is from your coaching side, so bringing your coaching out, like the importance of continuity in the offense, like the flow. When you start playing this style and having this size, part of what makes it work is having the offense with enough continuity and flow and invert that is about reaction, right? It's not designed in a way that's more pattern offense. It's designed with some central principles that have some continuity in it that allow for people to be interchangeable. So it's harder to scout. I think that's another part of Golden State that's hard to do. If they can improvise on the run, that they got basic principles. I think that was the value of the triangle in the sense that there's concepts that do it, but they can break and play based on how you defend it. So there's a lot of flexibility in the game, and how the evolution of how you teach offense with this is another piece. And so I know this is something you look at a lot in developing your stuff that I'd love to have you share with the listeners, because that's stuff they don't hear a lot of other podcasts. to understand why this works underneath. And it's not just the skill stuff, but it's how you put it together in a way that helps people understand and develop stuff that that makes it real kind of natural instincts playing off of it, because you have certain principles you react to that allow for the flow to happen. So I think I'd love to be able to dig into that, because that's a continuation of the identity you're trying to develop as an organization and a team, and why you select the kind of players you select.
Yeah, man, definitely, definitely, definitely. So we're going to wrap this one up. That's going to do it for the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. Until next time, Game Changer D. Will signing off. Tonight's show is brought to you by Carbon World Health. Make sure you check them out at carbonworldhealth.com. Connect with them and learn more about lifestyle medicine. This is lifestyle radio. This is a lifestyle podcast we got going on right here.
You know.
So until next time, peace.